Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and George Singer and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish with, praise the Lord, two confirmed signings to talk about. We'll start with the bigger name, Ivan Cavallero. The 25-year-old winger joins on loan from Wolves. This is a really good piece of business.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty unanimously happy with this one. Obviously, come from Wolves, had a struggled to break into a really good Wolves side last season, but in the Championship he was a mainstay and one of the reasons why they won the league doesn't really do it justice. They walked the league, didn't they? So if he can repeat some of that for us, on loan with an option to buy, it seems a pretty low risk, high reward kind of move.
Yeah, and people have already whipped out the Luis Bermoso comparisons. Another Portuguese winger to get us to 100 points in the Championship. I'm sure that's going to be the way this time. I think it's a position that we need to strengthen in, especially looking like Cesc is going to go. I think he normally plays off the left wing. I remember him scoring against us a couple of times as well. And in his first season in the Championship, he got to double figures in goals and assists, which is great. Especially as a winger, is pretty incredible. He's clearly a top player in the Championship. And the option to buy, do we know how much that was? The actual figure of how much he would cost?
Well, I don't know. So I've seen a couple of bits about when his contract with Wolves actually ends. I've seen in a few places that it ends this season, a few places that it ends next season. So depending on that, either way, because there can't be much time left on his contract, it's hopefully a bit of a good deal we picked up there.
Yeah, and he was one of the first kind of Wolves Portugal, links, wasn't he? He was one of the first to arrive.
A trailblazer, yeah. You could say.
Well, it was him and Helder Costa. I remember they signed them both in the same season, and in that season Wolves didn't actually make the playoffs in his first year. But I remember they turned us over when we were hunting for the playoffs. They beat us 3-1 at home. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
And that
yeah.
was a really disappointing game. Those two on the wings. And that was the same season as the 4-4, which I believe he scored in. Like I said, incredible player in the Championship.
Yeah, and you've signed a Portugal international on loan in the Championship. Does that encourage you that actually that spell back in the Premier League has reaffirmed to the footballing world that Fulham are a big club, they're a good destination for big stars?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, coupling that with Mitro taking a long-term contract, Kearney doing the same. The only potential concern is, how are we affording all this? we're putting way to be negative about it, right? But we're putting a lot of money out there. We're keeping most of our players. You've got to hope that we will be one of the strongest squads in the Championship next year. It does put a fair bit of pressure on it though, because it feels like this is the prime opportunity to go back up.
Yeah, I really agree with that, in that it's interesting seeing other fans' reaction on our tweets, on Fulham's tweets. When we announced Cavallero, there were lots of Fulham fans being like, yeah, get in. But there are lots of other Championship fans being like, oh, we're all doomed. And it's so weird.
Fans thinking that Fulham are now going to walk it.
Yeah, and it's so weird having that kind of pressure. It's so alien for Fulham. I don't know. I remember saying to you, Johnny, that if we were going to challenge, we had to keep Mitrovic, so we've done that. But I still, the pessimist in me still doesn't believe that we are actually going to challenge. But we should.
That's the thing. On paper, if you look at the squad, even just that combination of Cavallero on the wing delivering for Aleksandar Mitrovic, you've got one of the best wingers in the league. Let's not mess around. The best centre forward in the league. Surely that's a playoff push at the very, very least.
And yeah, I know, I agree. And you've got Alfie Mawson as well, arguably the best centre-back in the league. You've got Bessinelli.
We're going to win the World Cup.
But me and George were talking about Bessinelli off-air a minute ago, and I'm saying he's not... I've kind of forgotten what he's like as a player because he hasn't played for nearly a year. But at his peak in the Championship, he was one of the best goalkeepers. You know, that spine. And you've got Kearney's arguably the best attacking midfielder in the league. So it's actually, it's all adding up. And it's making me nervous. That's what it is.
Listeners, we don't have a live stream, unfortunately, in the studio for you. But Guy Barlow was sitting opposite me going, we've got the best striker in the league. We've got the best centre-back, the best attacking midfielder, gradually his hands rising up to his head, which he was then holding in a look of sort of fear and agony. What have you got to worry about? Your team is good. Relax.
I mean, you probably would have said that to a Stoke fan a year ago, right? They're the best side in the league and they finished 14th, 16th, something like that. So it's alien for Fulham. I think, like, when have we ever gone into a season with arguably the strongest squad on paper? Like, has that ever, since Tigana days maybe? Or
even going back further, Keegan in that Division 2, or the old Division 2 season when we won it with him and got over 100 points. But it really is alien, and I'm not sure how to react. And I still won't believe that these are all the best players until we start winning. Because, you know, like, always the cliche, winning's a habit, but I've forgotten what it's like, really.
If this season does go really well, if it plays out on the pitch as it looks like it might on paper, and you go up to the Premier League the first time of asking, are we going to look back on last season as one of the best things that could have happened to Fulham Football Club? Because are you going to learn your lessons?
I think ask is in 5 years, I'd say. Because if what happens with... everyone goes on about how Burnley came up in 2010 under Dyche, but they weren't expecting to, and they went straight back down, and they came back up, and now they're still in the Premier League. So I guess the answer, unfortunately, is not a very interesting one from me. But it is. Like, ask us in a few years, because then we'll truly know.
Yeah. I think from my point of view, one of the big lessons we've had over the last 2 or 3 years, every transfer window, we overhaul the majority of the squad. It takes a while to get going. I know we've just got a guy on loan, but our squad normally was full of loan players which would leave at the end of the season. You know, this is the first time where I actually feel like we're keeping the spine of the squad, we're keeping the core of the squad. There's a few of the guys, you know, the majority of this side is going to be the guys that got us promoted a couple of seasons ago. So I feel there are some lessons being learned, and hopefully if we can, you know, keep this fairly strong squad, potentially go up and strengthen in specific areas rather than buying a whole new team like we did last summer, you know, then we might see some of the benefits. But like Guy said, I think it's going to take a couple of years before we can really know whether this has been a success or not.
But in terms of learning those lessons, if you go up again, we're not surely going to see another 100 million quid splurge signing anyone who's ever played a good pass in Ligue 1.
Probably not, but you never know.
There's always hope.
It depends on our how much our transfer policy is changing. Cause it does feel like it's a constantly moving beast, isn't it? Like how we actually sign players, and it will just be experience. You know, the owners are new to the job. Tony Khan's only done it for a few years, I think. He'll have learned his lessons, and as long as he's learned his lessons, that's more important than anyone else, really.
Yeah, and I guess how long has Shade been owning us for? Kind of like 5 or 6 years, maybe.
He took over in 2013.
Yeah, so a little while now. And I remember when he first came in, it was all about stability. It was all about making sure that we could, you know, run ourselves sustainably financially, and it was always that message. And then recently, we've been investing more and more and more on the pitch and off the pitch. So I don't know if it's a symptom of, you know, the Khan's just getting a little bit frustrated and wanting to accelerate the growth a bit, which, you know, part of me is really happy about. But another part of me is thinking, you know, if we're investing all this money on the pitch, if Shahid, for whatever reason, you know, maybe he's got frustrated about things like the Wembley sale or whatever and wants to move out, then, you know, does that leave us in a bit of an awkward position? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a position that a lot of football clubs find themselves in, you know, overly reliant on a single owner. And if they suddenly switch the tap off, then a lot of clubs would be in trouble. You know, like Derby got around FFP by like selling their stadium back to the owner and then back to themselves, and like all sorts of ways. And I think Villa have done that as well. But just going back a minute about, you know, the actual strength of our team. So we've got all these great players, but we have got a novice manager. And maybe now thinking about it, that's why I'm a little bit nervous. Like, I wonder how he's going to cope, Scott.
Yeah, he's definitely got a job on his hands, hasn't he? I mean, from the little that we've seen, you know, the odd video in Portugal, which Fulham are, you know, tweeting about every 20 seconds, a new video of them all having fun out in Portugal. I mean, there seems to be a good kind of humility in the squad. They seem to be getting on pretty well. Mm. So there seems to be a good environment and atmosphere, but that's only one half of it, really. You know, does he have the tactical nous to, you know, play the right players in the right system? Does he know enough about the opposition so he can kind of tweak it to make the most of our strengths and their weaknesses? You know, only time will tell, but this is such a good opportunity to get promoted straight up to the Premier League, and it does feel a little bit risky putting all those on the shoulders of, you know, someone in his first managerial job.
And it'll be partially on the shoulders of a 19-year-old as well, because Ivan Cavallero isn't the only player you've signed. You've also brought in 19-year-old Martel Taylor Crossdale, I should say, from Chelsea. What kind of player is he, and are you expecting him to make an impact?
So if anyone listening wants to know a bit more about him, probably the best place to take a look, if you go on the Fulhamish website, Frankie Taylor has written a piece for us about Martel. Frankie's got a fair bit of experience and knowledge about kind of youth players and knows a bit about the guy. So if you want a really good informed, you know, bit of detail about the guy, I'd recommend you take a look there. Essentially, I think he's come from the Chelsea youth system. Obviously, it's a bit of a strange situation there with a gluttony of talent and not really enough spots to fill them in, especially with the loan restrictions coming. So it was a great opportunity for us to get a guy with really great potential. The skills that Frankie points out in the article, very quick, good on his feet, more of kind of in the mould of a number nine kind of advanced striker, more of a poacher. You know, good running off the last man, but not necessarily going to drop deep. So I think it's unlikely, you know, if you're vying for a position against Mitrovic, who never seems to get tired or injured ever, you know, you're not going to get much opportunity. But maybe that's what we need, you know, a player who's not necessarily going to expect to play, but will appreciate odd minutes here and there in the cup. Can learn off more experienced guys like Mitrovic or Rui Font, who has still got on the team. So I think it's unlikely he'll break straight into the squad, but I think he'll be a fairly good option to have on the bench and should only get better in time, really.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said, but I do kind of think that he's an under-23 player, isn't he? He's going to be part of that squad. Yeah. I don't expect him to be getting many minutes, you know. It reminds me of, you know, we got Timmy Abraham from Chelsea 1 or 2 years ago now. He was also a striker. I definitely see him as part of the development squad. I remember, it's interesting what you were saying there about, you know, there's so much quality in the Chelsea Academy, but there isn't necessarily that path to the first team. Like, people talk about Fulham, maybe he's felt like he's definitely, it's visible to him at Fulham, and it's something we've got a history of. But it is interesting... you know, the fact that we are kind of poaching a youth player, you know? Like, it's not something you'd actually associate us doing that much. Normally, we'd bring in our own players and then they'd either get in the first team or leave, you know? It's interesting to see us do that. I mean, I remember us doing it with Moussa Dembele from PSG, but we're in the Premier League then. A lot of clubs, Chelsea included, have gotten in a lot of trouble for poaching youth players, so we need to be careful.
Yes, I think generally if they're over 18 and they're coming from an English club, you're probably okay, and I'm sure everything is above board. Not the only transfer rumours, the only confirmed deals this week, but we've still got Fulham-based speculation whizzing around, including a certain Evertonian midfielder. That's coming up in just a moment.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. It's me, Johnny Burrow, joined by George Singer and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish in the studio. And we're talking transfer rumours. Lots of links flying around, not least Mo Besic from Everton. Impressive midfield player, but not quite worked out for him on Merseyside.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like one of those... you're trying to get the player when they're, you know, maybe a little bit lost in confidence, maybe out of the first team, and you can pick them up on a good deal. So it feels like that kind of signing from us. Although I think in the literally hot off the press,
not that hot off the press.
Was it not that hot off the press?
I think it was 4 hours ago.
4 hours ago. Okay.
So I missed it. But it was just a tweet from the official Galatasaray account saying, translated by Google Translate, official negotiations with a footballer, Fulham FC started for the temporary transfer of Seri to our club. So I guess the rumours were, Johnny, that it was going to be a loan to buy option from Galatasaray and a loan fee. Which my take is, I'm not very happy with that. I'd rather just sell him and get him out.
Where have the Serie A links gone? Because we were seeing him heavily linked with Napoli, with Roma, with basically any top Italian side. It looked certain he was going to go to one of them, and suddenly, Turkey.
The only thing I've heard about the Galatasaray rumour is they would pay all of his wages for this season. So he's on loan, but they would take all of the hit on the wage, which...
What is it roughly?
I think it's 80, isn't it? I think he was our highest ever paid.
Yeah, and that is big in the Championship.
Yeah,
that is. I don't know whether he would have. There were any clauses for that to be knocked down when we got promoted, but still, it was a lot of money.
Oh no, there must have been a relegation clause. Yeah.
So whether it is that figure or slightly lower, whatever, he's probably still one of, if not the highest paid player on our team. So getting him off the books and moving all of that wage from one pot to another is probably the most important thing for us at the moment. I don't know how much, you know, what the overall buying figure is. It feels unlikely that we're probably going to make a small loss on him. But, you know, if that helps him reignite his career, it felt like one where he was, you know, he to me felt like one of the most talented players we've ever had in a Fulham shirt, but it just never worked. We can never get him in a system that worked. We can never surround him with the players that he wanted to. And it always kind of, I always felt in a similar way to Berbatov, who, when he came in, was at such a different level because everyone else around him was just not quite there. They not really not on his wavelength. It never got the best out of Berbatov. And I always felt there was some similarities with Jean-Michel Seri there, who, you know, could never quite get going because he was paired with, you know, kind of substandard players compared to him, really.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. Some people might think that you're exaggerating a bit in terms of you calling him one of the most talented players to ever play in a Fulham shirt. But I think I'm one of the few who might agree. I remember particularly the beginning of last season, he looked absolutely incredible. And you could tell from the very first game against Crystal Palace just how good a player he was. And then he scored in the next home game. He scored that incredible goal against Burnley. He started off very well, but you're right about not finding a system / not finding the players to play with him. And I think, I know that we go on about Ranieri being such a bad person for Fulham, but another part of his horrible legacy was taking Seri out of the team / destroying his confidence. And I guess, like what you said, you know, all those constant managerial changes kind of helped him his career at Fulham. It would have been a very difficult time, and under some different circumstances, he definitely could have flourished in the Premier League, and he could probably flourish in any league in the world. You know, like he is an incredible player.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where I think that the modern fan is recognising that sometimes things don't line up, and it just might not work, and there are more factors than you would consider normally. And there were clearly a lot of factors which why it didn't work for him, which is very disappointing. But I don't know, it's just one of those ones where you say, thanks, but, you know, see you later.
Well, are all Fulham fans saying thanks? I've seen quite a lot of stuff on Twitter with people really desperate for him to go, people saying they're going to celebrate when he leaves the club. Do you think that's fair?
Not at all. Yeah,
no. No, I mean, the only bit I can kind of understand... Anytime you bring someone in for a significant amount of money, the expectations go high, and the expectations when we started last season were very high. And, you know, Seri, along with players like Andre Schürrle, you know, there were players that helped raise our expectations, and we were thinking, you know, comfortably avoid relegation, maybe even top half, and in the end it really didn't work, and he was kind of, one of those, you know, he kind of embodied that, you know, really missing the expectations completely. I do think it's harsh, but then again, I think he's got a lot of qualities that not all football fans appreciate. Like, he's so he's so skillful on the ball. It's kind of lots of nuances of little shimmies, little turns, and opening up space. You know, he's not going to score 10, 15 goals a season. He's not always going to get 10, 15 assists, but it's the way that he builds attack from deep, and it's little nuances here and there which not all football fans can see. And I think he bought a lot, like kind of Brian Ruiz, I felt, who I thought always got a lot of harsh treatment. I think he added so much to the Fulham game, and we really missed him when he left. And I think, you know, I think it's, you know, we might even see you know, a struggle in the build-up play, you know, and people after that will hopefully realise what an important player Seri was and what he brought to the team. But, you know, we'll never know, really.
George, do you think Fulham fans aren't capable of appreciating Seri?
I think a lot of, not necessarily Fulham fans, but a lot of football fans out there. I mean, it's with players like Seri, I think you've quite often got to go along to games. I'm not, obviously there are lots of people who go along to a lot of games.
He's not a match of the day player.
He's not a match of the day player, but he's one of those players which I feel you kind of need to spend a lot of time watching him, and not always just necessarily following the ball around the pitch, but if you just watch him, watch his positioning, I think he adds a lot to Fulham's game, and it's not always obvious. You've really got to watch out for it, but I think he does add a lot of quality to Fulham's play. And I think unless you kind of really study that and study his nuances and kind of understand what he's trying to do, I think it's quite easy for a lot of football fans out there to miss it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Maybe he wasn't, obviously hindsight, but maybe he wasn't the right player for a projected relegation battle, you know. And
but you weren't projecting a relegation battle when you spent that kind of money.
But we were, though. We were.
Well, we weren't.
Well, like, I don't know. Yes, we spent a lot of money, but we were still... I don't know, George. What were you... I was still expecting to finish bottom half and, like, lower mid-table. If not, like, maybe a full-on battle, but I wasn't expecting, you know,
I think as fans, half the fun is getting carried away, and half the fun is, you know, thinking about those lofty heights. But it's the, you know, it's the people who are running the club who know the quality of the signing, know the relative quality of our squad, who should have been maybe a bit more pragmatic, and rather than trying to jump immediately from promotion via the playoffs and all the way moving up, you know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but if we, rather than spending money on, you know, potentially a bit more of a luxury player or the kind of player who probably would do great in a side like Barcelona, if maybe, you know, we spent a bit more on more solid defensive reinforcements, then that would have helped. But, you know, it's so easy to say that looking back. But yeah, honestly, I think Seri will absolutely go on to have probably a really good career in Galatasaray. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back in Europe or maybe back in the Premier League in a few years' time.
Do you think he's been scapegoated by Fulham fans? Do you think precisely because he was relatively expensive, because he was seen as a coup, because you were all so excited with the signing, he's come to stand for, to represent all of the bad recruitment that took place last summer?
I think he's one of a few to be scapegoated, because there was a period where he did have a different form and he was taken out of the team, and that kind of took the spotlight off him a bit. And then he came back into the team once we were kind of relegated and, you know, played well, as is always the case. But yeah, no, I think arguably the biggest scapegoat last season was Christie. And I know we're going to talk about in places we'd like to see Fulham strengthen, and one of those is definitely right back. But as of yet, I haven't seen any kind of links with right backs. And second, as in a addition to that, I haven't seen Steven Sessegnon get much game time. It's particularly not in the Porto game last night.
Could he not be off to Spurs?
Well, I saw that rumor, didn't I? But like, I thought it was a bit ludicrous. Was it like it was like the both of them for 30 million, wasn't it? Was that what it was?
That sounds a little bit low. I think the rumour probably has legs. I'm not sure whether the figure does.
I thought it was like they were offering 21 million for Ryan and 9 million for Steven. And I thought it was 30 for both.
It sounds like almost too much for Stephen and not enough for Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I mean, this is what my Spurs mate told me. So that's, I don't know how true it is.
Is your Spurs mate Mauricio Pochettino?
No, because I'll never be friends with a Spurs fan. Yeah, but right back is somewhere we definitely need to strengthen.
Are there any names that you're looking at?
No, that's the thing.
Who would you look at if you were in charge of recruitment?
Kieran Trippier?
Atletico Madrid's finest,
yeah.
Of course.
I was thinking that. Obviously, I didn't watch that much of the Championship last year because we're in the Premier League. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see who performed well in the Championship. Because Christie was great for Middlesbrough and Derby in the Championship. That's why we signed him. I don't know. It'd be really interesting to see who we go for.
I'd be really interested to see Kyle Walker-Peters.
You're never getting Kyle Walker-Peters. Well, not an absolute prayer.
So I think this is where, obviously, Spurs have already got... Well, they did have Trippier. They've got Serge Aurier. And I think it'll be interesting to see if they reinvest that money in a new right back. If they do, they've got two top quality right backs, and if we could get a player of his quality, you know, good enough probably to play in the Spurs squad but unlucky enough to be behind a couple of players, you know, I'd love to see us in for a guy like them. Obviously, it fully depends what Spurs do with the Trippier money. You know, knowing Spurs, they won't spend any of it, but if there's players like that, I'd love to see us dip into the loan market, or, you know, I think there's a lot of quality out there.
Yeah, I think the loan market is a good suggestion. All the chat I've heard about Walker-Peters from Spurs fans in the know is that the fact that Pochettino is willing to let Trippier go means that he does trust Walker-Peters. There were suggestions that he really didn't, but Spurs fans on Twitter today are basically saying, right, this is time for Aurier to make that right back spot his own. And Walker-Peters is going to deputise. So I suspect he may not be the man.
I also saw on Spurs Twitter that Foyth is going to be moved to right back.
And really?
Yeah.
In that system?
Yeah. And the
Would you do that?
Well,
lumbering centre half at wing back.
I don't know enough about Foyth, but I know that he's young, isn't he? Is he 20?
Like, yeah, he's a young kid, and he's rated to an extent, but he's not exactly Dani Alves.
But he's there to be moulded, though, isn't he?
He is. That's true.
So I also saw that just to counter. No,
that's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that. I'd be quite interested to see that happen. And you are, of course, looking at signings at the other end of the pitch as well. And there's potential for another Fulham raid on Bristol City, George.
Yeah, so Callum O'Dowd is one that we've seen linked. I think it was one of those we were a bit unsure about it until Callum O'Dowd's dad started following us. Callum O'Dowd's dad started following a fair few of the Fulham guys.
A lot of random Fulham people.
Including Cam Ramsey.
Fame. But who are the people on Twitter who are finding Callum O'Dowd's dad, finding out that he's following Fulham people?
Well, we're getting notifications that he's following us.
No, but I think, and I also think it's quite obvious that it's his dad.
Is that his Twitter handle?
No, it's just
at O'Dowd Dowder.
I think I don't know. I saw a screenshot of his profile, and like one of the opening photos is like his son, which is obviously a professional footballer. I don't know. Yeah, it could be a pretty big indicator. I do think people do read too much into like all the followers on Instagram and the likes and things like that. But in this case, it's not the actual player, it's his dad, which is quite funny.
And if it's the dad, there is... I mean, if we think about the way that parents care about us, there's a possibility that he's seeing his son linked. And the reason why following harsh critics such as Cam Ramsey is because he wants to know what Fulham fans are saying about Callum, whether they even want him at all.
Yeah, potentially. Look, I mean, it's fun to speculate, right?
It's hilarious.
Yeah. I'm not too sure on the guy. The figure we've seen quoted is 8 million, which sounds like, I know price have been inflated recently, but that feels quite high. It doesn't necessarily feel like the player that's going to move the needle and really strengthen, you know, a potentially top two team.
It doesn't really feel like a Tony Khan kind of signing either. We haven't tended to poach other Championship players, apart from when we first came down and we obviously paid big money for Ross McCormack. But since then, the policy has been to go to Belgium or France or you know, wherever, basically anywhere but England, excluding the loan market and Chelsea, to get our kind of big money players. So, I'd be surprised. Another one that seems to have gone cold is Konsa from Brentford.
He's gone.
So he's gone to Aston Villa, I think.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't really across that.
I don't think you've missed out on much there.
Really?
I think at Championship level you might have done, but I think Brentford were more than happy to sell Konsa and buy Pontus Janssen, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean...
Really?
Yeah.
But I don't rate Pontus Janssen.
You're not? He's an absolute titan of a man.
No, just because he, like, pats his chest and...
But he doesn't pat his chest. He absolutely whacks it.
Okay, so he thumps his chest in front of the Leeds fans and, like, he's not actually good.
Have you seen his haircut?
So what?
He looks lethal.
He's not actually a good player. I really... Like, he's at fault for a lot more goals than you think he would
22 Sweden caps.
I don't know, like...
Kaczyniklić, how many Sweden caps have Kaczyniklić?
No, fair enough.
Yeah.
But the thing with Konsa, like, I don't... You know, Brentford got buy him for a season from Charlton, sell him a season later for $10 million. Like, if I'm a Brentford fan, I'm going to be happy with that.
And if you're a Charlton fan, you're really not. I've been talking to them on the Charlton Fan Show, which is every Thursday night, 9 till 10, here on Love Sport Radio. And they're going, what are we doing in selling players? Because there are two options. Either Ezri Konsa's got worth $10 million more in the space of a year, which he quite clearly hasn't, or they are underselling their top talent. At least it's sounding like Fulham are going to get their money's worth if the likes of Seri do leave the club. But coming up, we're going to be focusing on what's going on the pitch with all the pre-season latest. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Fulhamish's Dom Betts is not in the studio this evening. He will be this season because the Nutter follows Fulham for pre-season. It's been very lively on the pitch for the club, doubtless off it for Betts as well. He and the club have been in Portugal and it's all been fairly positive.
It's all been pretty good. I mean, so we've had a couple of friendlies on the pitch out there. The main one that we actually got to see bits of, and it wasn't, you know, behind closed doors, was a 1-0 loss yesterday against a pretty strong Porto side. You know, considering they're Champions League regulars.
Knockout stage regulars.
Yeah. You know, I think there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of you know, only losing 1-0, and the performance seemed pretty positive.
Yeah, I've watched the highlights and I was watching caught bits of it during the game as well. We set out with a pretty strong team, like a pretty standard team you might expect, with the classic midfield three that got us up, McDonald, Johansson, Kenny, Mitro up front. We had Cabano on the left and we had AK on the right. And then defence, we had Mawson, Odoi, Brian, which I take those three whenever transfer window closes, 2 weeks, I take those three as our three. And I know I will stop the Christie bashing now, but apart from that, 10 out of 11, I think I'd be very happy with it if we lined up like that at Barnsley away, you know. And finally, with Caviero coming on to replace Cabano being in the second half, that is a pretty strong team, you have to say.
I'd agree there. I'm going to continue the Christie bashing. I think of the players who... I know it's pre-season friendly, I know it's only one game, you can't read too much into it, but... For me, it felt like there were two positions which we were potentially a little bit weak on. One of them being Kev McDonald. I think he felt kind of half a yard off the pace. I know he's kind of, if he's not already 30, like he's probably quite close. Pace has never been the key piece of his game, but you know, that's, you know, he's certainly not getting any quicker. And then the other one, Cyrus Christie, who I think... Yes, he probably gets more abuse than he should, but I still don't think he's a top-quality player. He's mediocre in attack, but in defence he gets caught out of position so often. And we saw him giving away the penalty against, was it Burnley? I think it was him giving the penalty away. And again against Porto, so often he stands a yard, 2 yards in front of the defensive line and players can run behind him. And he does it time and time again. And to me, that feels like the obvious weak spot in this side that needs upgrading him, really.
Yeah, maybe there's a thought that Christie would get away with it in the Championship, you know, because we are going to be a team that's going to have majority of the ball, and you'd hope the majority of the attacking play in hopefully the majority of our games. So, you know, because the rest of our team is that strong. So there is a sense he might get away with it. I know you are more concerned about his defensive ability, but I'm more concerned about his attacking ability. Especially the fact that we are going to be challenging, hopefully, for promotion. He always seems to do the same thing when he's going forward, which is cutting on his left and then do a floaty little cross to the back post. You know, it's rubbish. But I did also want to pick up on something you said on McDonald's, in that, yes, he's a bit slow and pace has never been part of his game. One, that might be like an advantage, the fact that he's never had to rely on it. So he might actually, you know, adapt well to getting older, or better than most. And two, he hasn't played for about a year, you know? He did not play in the Premier League, did he? I can't remember the last time he played. He might have played once or twice in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And even so, you'd think he'd be a backup to Anguissa, assuming Anguissa stays.
Zambo.
That's the one. Zambo number five. Who's obviously bossed it at the AFCON, but is...
Obviously
he did. I didn't watch a minute of him, but I you know,
you knew he ran the midfield.
Yeah.
You don't need to watch.
Exactly. It's absolute given. But yeah, so he'll be back in the side, and you'd expect McDonald to be a backup and just to be a great presence in there. He seems like a real leader in that dressing room.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the experience, having gone through, you know, a couple of great seasons with us, being in the Wolves side for a while before we got him from there. You know, I think he perhaps offers bits to the squad in different ways. You know, for me, it's Christie's the one. I think we've perhaps been spoilt with a player like Ryan Fredericks for a couple of seasons, who, not the technically best player in the world, but certainly one of the quickest. And he relied on that for his defence, and he relied on that in attack. And, you know, he offered things that no other player could. And, you know, Christie at this point, I don't think really offers a new dimension in a way that Fredericks did or Matt Target did when he came up to us. So, you know, of all the players, I'd love to see Stephen Sess move up to the first team and potentially get some minutes. But like we said, it feels unlikely that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I'm also interested in the... I don't think it will be a battle, but I'm interested in the role that Rodak will play. Because by all accounts, I mentioned this a few times, he's been class at Rotherham for the past 2 years. Like, he's part of their playoff-winning side in League One, and then obviously they got relegated last year in the Championship. But I know he made a lot of saves as one of the bottom teams. You'd expect him to. He made a few penalty saves. Like, he seems like a proper prospect. And when he came on last night as well, he seemed good with his feet. And he's still very young, like a tall, kind of gangly, one of the lanky kind of goalkeepers, I kind of guess. But yeah, it'd be interesting in that, because as I mentioned, Betts hasn't played a lot of first-team football for a while.
He's following the team for pre-season.
well, that Don Betts hasn't played a single minute of first-team football in his life. But no, I'm talking about Bessinelli.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll be interested in that battle for obviously second and third choice after Fabbri takes the number one spot.
Yeah. I mean, I often forget that Fabbri's there.
How can you forget him? There's been loads of photos of him.
Yeah. I mean, I still think he's a decent keeper.
Yeah, I know.
Came from Besiktas.
You sound convinced.
He's a Champions League goalkeeper.
Yeah. Well, he only played twice for us.
Yeah,
played against Palace and
fought for a goal officially.
Yeah,
and I think officially he was, you know, like goals leading to errors by players. I think he might have had two.
Have had a couple of those.
I think he might have had two in his three games, which is really funny.
Yeah.
But start him. He's a little fella as well for a goalkeeper. He's only like 6 foot. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I think, and he's, I don't know, little Spanish goalkeeper. I find it really funny.
How, when you say little, how little are we talking?
Oh, like 6 foot, 6'1".
Oh, tiny, yeah. Little, 6'1", minuscule.
No, but he seems he's so smiley on Twitter in like all of his photos. He's like.
Do
a...
you think that all smiley people are small, Guy?
And don't forget the Spanish in there.
We're going to keep digging.
I don't know why I find it so funny that he's like a little Spanish goalkeeper who's turned up at Fulham with rubbish. Do you know what I mean? I just find it a little hilarious situation. But he came out of absolutely nowhere.
So fact that he's rubbish that makes him funny. Is that what you're saying?
But we paid $5 million for this tiny Spanish goalkeeper from Turkey. Is really, really funny.
He played 2 games with us and probably going to be on the
bench. And was rubbish in those 2 games.
Yeah, and
then
going to be on the bench for 5 years. Like, yeah. All the best to him.
Yeah, yeah. Everything you dream of as a young goalkeeper in Spain. Right, coming up, we've had ticket prices revealed for the first 3 games of the season, and it's going to shock you.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for your legend of gents. Who are we going for this week?
This week, I'm going to pick one of my favourite players, Northern Irish Chris Baird, or Bairdinho, as he's commonly known as by the Fulham faithful. I think for me, he epitomises the kind of player that Fulham fans love, and that's probably quite unique to Fulham fans, how he's, you know, had a true underdog story of coming to the squad, initially struggling to hold down a position. You know, he's one of those workhorses that works so hard. And when he finally did find the position that suited him, which after going right back, centre back, left back, you know, I'm sure he probably played in goal a couple of times. You know, he played everywhere. But for me, it was in central midfield in the European run where this, you know, plucky little underdog Fulham side got all the way to the European final, beating heavyweights along the way. It was plucky little Chris Baird who, the ultimate underdog in the middle of midfield, orchestrating things, working as hard as you've ever seen a player work before. You know, for me, he epitomises everything that Fulham fans like to see in a player.
And George, you were tweeting about him recently and that went rather well for you.
I did, yeah. His lovely wife messaged me and sent me a signed shirt of his, which was very kind of her. So I'm currently in the process of getting that framed and it'll go up my bedroom wall. So yes, he certainly was one of my favourite players before. But after that, I'm happy to say he's certainly my favourite Fulham player.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with everything he said. I remember his start wasn't the greatest, as you said. He was part of that Northern Irish cohort that Laurie Sanchez brought over. And it initially really wasn't great. But he went on to make close to 200 appearances for us, maybe. Certainly well over 100. And like you said, played everywhere. Who could forget the 2 free kicks away at Stoke? At Boxing Day, that was under Mark Hughes. No, it was the game week after Boxing Day, because we lost at home to West Ham on Boxing Day. And then 2 days later, when we were in the relegation zone, we needed a win. And who pops up with 2 bullet free kicks? Bairdinho.
In the glorious green and gold kit, my favourite. Lovely Harrods kit.
Well, he's quite something. He was quite a player. And that is why he's your legend of the week. Of the week. And gents, looking ahead to the new Championship season, which is fast upon us, we've had the ticket prices revealed for the first few games. What do you make of the club's pricing?
So, I mean, you might remember, Johnny, so at the end of last season, we were running a kind of fan-led campaign, you could call it, to put pressure on the club about the prices of tickets. So, particularly the price of matchday tickets throughout our Premier League journey just went up and up and up, is pushing kind of real fans out of following Fulham. You know, people literally couldn't afford to go and watch Fulham. And the conversations we're having at the end of last season were, you know, we're going to have to wait until the start of next season to know if that pressure's worked and know if we're going to see ticket prices fall down to more of an acceptable level. And this is the first indication, I guess, we're getting of what ticket prices are likely to be this season. And I don't know, I'm a bit on the fence. I mean, so the prices that we're looking at, so for the first 3 games of the season, which are Blackburn, Forest, and one other. I can't remember off the top of my head. So, you know, certainly no kind of Category A. I know we don't have Category A, B and C in the Championship, but none of those big Brentford, Leeds, you know, huge games. And we're talking minimum price being £30 for an adult, looking at 35 and up in the Johnny Haynes stand. So certainly, I think probably £5 or £10 more expensive than the start of our Championship run a couple of seasons ago. So
yeah, I think the thing that I was looking at was the under 18 bracket, because that's always like a good indicator, isn't it? That's sort of families who might want to come and watch, and that's £15 throughout the three stands that we have. And I kind of think that's probably fair. You'd expect it to drop for like the promotional thing, and you know, midweek games, it might drop even further. But I think these are all Saturday games as well, which again might make a difference. And you know, there are things like if you've got a membership, then these tickets prices will fall by £5 as long as you don't buy on the match day. So I think it's probably what you'd expect. I remember when I didn't have a season ticket in the Championship, it was £25. So, and if that was if I wanted to turn up on the day. So I it might drop even further, depends how well the season goes.
Yeah, I guess the main difference here is obviously we don't have the Riverside stand this season for, is it just one season?
Two seasons.
Is it two seasons? So there's a bit of supply and demand there, obviously with less available seats. We kind of expected the prices to be bumped up a bit. I think we'd probably say that it's not as bad as I feared, but it's okay. I think it's on the verge. It's kind of on the edge of palatable, I'd say.
Yeah, it's going to be just on that whole like lack of Riverside thing. It's still not sinking in, really. It's what it's going to be like only having three stands.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a consideration they've had with season tickets and stuff, and that whole delay which we spoke about on the show before, but just from a watching football point of view, I mean, I sit in the hammy ends, and not having anything to my right is going to be very strange, you know.
Yeah. Well, even for the guys in the Johnny Haynes, it'll be looking at a blank stand. I think. So correct me if I'm wrong, but on a TV game, it's normally the Riverside, which is in the background.
No,
is it the other way around?
Yes, Johnny Haynes, because you've got the Fulham Football Club like on the roof of the Johnny Haynes, and you can see, you have the cottage in the. As you look at a screen from left to right, you've got the hammy end and you've got the cottage on the right in the right-hand corner. So I assume they'll leave the cameras in there somehow. You'd have thought that, wouldn't you? Like, yeah. There's no point in filming an empty stand.
Yeah.
It would just look weird. I remember Bristol City, when they had three stands, they left the cameras in their empty stands. So, but it's going to certainly change the atmosphere.
It is. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't end up being so much that we can't, you know, if we're not able to sell out 2/3 of our stands, then that's going to be pretty embarrassing. You know, I'm hoping it's just about palatable for the fans, and I'm hoping as part of the, you know, piece of work we've done to try and pressurise the club into reducing them, hopefully it's, you know, helped somewhat. But you know, I think at this point we'll probably take it, but it certainly could be better.
Well, it's still optimistic times ahead of the new season at Fulham. Ivan Caballero joins on loan. Mitro has signed a new deal, and it's looking very, very lively. Could it be a playoff push? Could it be a promotion push? Join us next week on the Fulham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.